Blog Talk Radio.
I see a few pockets of people that ain't acting crazy. Because I'm here live.
Candid Frank Live.
About half of y'all motherfuckers on the hill are doing your thing. Are y'all ready to get live or what?
Candid Frank Live.
We gonna set this up right or what? It's Friday night. We'll see. I'm the cream of the crop. I rise to the top. Never eat a pig.
We're getting down to the short strokes of the CFL season, and of course that means the excitement is starting to really kick in. Yes, it is. It is a wonderful week, isn't it? Oh, it's two playoff games to determine who plays the last two teams standing. Yes. Oh, what a moment. I'm telling you. But first, dearly beloved, we are gathered here. The quiet burial of the Toronto Argonauts due to the injury to Chad Kaggart. Will we survive? Can we overcome? Lord, let us know. We need your help. We really, really do. And those people who think I'm mocking God at this point, you're freaking crazy, because I'm serious. I'm worried now. So Chad Kaggart hurts himself today. He trips over the carpet. We've all done that a million times. I mean, I walk down the stairs and miss a step. Haven't you ever done that? Especially if you get a new pair of glasses. Especially bifocals, because old farts like me need bifocals. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Yes, I can see that a lot of Argo fans are on bended knee and are not giving up a point or asking for a free catch. Yes, or fair catch, sorry. They're hoping that Chad Kaggart ends up healthy when it comes to November 17th, 2013, Rogers Centre, Toronto, versus the Ticats or the Alouettes. Well, it's going to be an interesting day that day to see. They haven't received all the reports yet. He's going to get operated on right away. They really haven't told us what's wrong with him 100%. I heard earlier today on the rumor mill, I got a call. Well, a posting. Frank, did you hear? Kaggart broke his leg. But don't tell anybody I told you. Well, of course, being the pessimist and the one that doesn't want to even think about Chatty being hurt. Well, the Kack attack is on hold, which has nothing to do with the show tonight, because the show tonight's about the teams meeting this week in the playoffs. That determines who plays for the East-West final. So, with no further ado, my cat obviously is very upset. I hear her whining. It's probably because Chad got hurt. But that's okay. Just for the Argo fans out there, settle down. Calm right down. Keep calm, like that British thing says. The team will be fine under Jarius Norwood. And not to name another guy that's going to come up big. He's going to have a C.J. Gable kind of game. Yes, he will. So that's my intro to the season as it ends. And with any hope, it will end in a good way. And from what I hear, Bradwell's not hurt, so, you know, or he's getting better and he will be able to play. But we'll see. enough about the Argos for the moment. There will be a time if people, the right people call, we'll be able to talk about the Argos. But for now, we're going to discuss the East-West semifinals. Now, should we? I think we should. What do you guys think?
The story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Was it a plot? Well, I don't know. I think Chad Kackert got hurt by it. And even Scott Milanovic said it wasn't an inside job because he didn't seem to be hit by anybody. So, yeah, let's. Well, we got the usual suspects are on the phone. We'll get to you guys in a sec. First, we'll tweak the show a little bit, and I'll start. Well, I'd like to start by talking about, shall we start? I'll tell you what, I'll let the guys decide. Okay, guys, where should we start, East or West?
Don't everybody speak up at once.
It's all right.
Let's start in the
Jones.
East.
Let's start in the East?
In the East.
Okay. Okay, then let me throw out a teaser. Okay, let me throw a teaser out, okay?
Okay.
And now, I think I've noticed that, okay, here. Let's start with Troy Smith. And the Owls trust Troy Smith. The players do. And this is their verbiage.
He's done a really good job. He's picked up the offense. He's been smart with his reads. And other than that pick six last week, he's made really smart decisions. So I like what Troy's doing. He's very athletic back there. He's gotten away from some pass rush, extended some plays that led to some big plays down the field. So I like where he's going in our offense.
He's not coming right out of college. I mean, this is a guy that's been in some extremely high-pressure games when he was in college, and then going on to the NFL and playing on very high-caliber teams and being a part of all that along with starting. So it's, you know, maturity's come along with all that, that he's experienced that a lot of other people have never have experienced. So he brings that to the table. He brings that to us. So him understanding and getting to know our league, he's adapted fairly quickly, but he's still got a ways to go, but he's going well.
There's still some things that I have to learn and go through, and every day I'm learning. Every day I'm getting a chance to bump my head and honestly make the mistake and rebound from it. So for me, it's good.
You know, previously in years, you know, our offense was kind of condensed based on the offense that we ran and play that we ran. We didn't really go down the field as much. With the ability that we have here with Troy and his throwing ability, it definitely gives us an opportunity to stretch the defense a lot more than we have before. So teams have to be, they have to respect that. And if they don't, you know, strike them to bear.
It makes it kind of hard as a O-line to gel together when you have, you know, different guys back there. But now that Troy's been back there for three games now, we're pretty confident. We know what he's going to do and what he's thinking, and we're on the same page. So it's good going into the playoffs. We're all on the same page.
On the other side of the field where the Ticats reside, on the same side of the ball on offense, Kahari Grant has had some injuries this year, and he really is a great, I don't know, I believe he's still a rookie. I think he's a rookie this year. But anyway, Burris, Austin, and Grant on Grant, and then we'll talk about the East guys.
Oh, Bakari, I mean, he's came a long ways. I mean, you know, from a guy last year that you know, he was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, I call him. You know, he still had some Similac on his breath, you know what I mean? You know, he was wearing some Pampers around here, but, you know, the kid quickly grew.
I think Bakari has grown a lot in his maturity. You know, early on in OTAs, we weren't really sure about his work ethic, and as we were trying to figure out all our guys. But Bakari's been outstanding.
I mean, he's became a guy that I can trust, our offense we can trust. You know, if there's an opportunity that a play needs to be made, we know he's one guy that we can go to.
I see him in certain situations where he feels pressure, and sometimes he'll put the ball up to me.
and I try to make a play every time he does.
You know, without all the injuries that he had last year, he would have had a special season. But this year he's been able to maintain, you know, as far as an injury-free stature. And, you know, he's been out there pretty much all the games for us this year. And he's made play after play after play.
He's a hard worker. He cares. You know, all those things that can carry over into a football game, Bakari does. And I think that level of discipline and work ethic, and he's smart too. Bakari picked up the offense very quickly. Have all helped in a way that helped his growth.
We got a good team, and like I said, coming back from practice, we joke around and we have laughs, and it's a good time. So
this has been a fun year for us all. We've seen this team grow from being a team that was young and trying to just, you know, gain some structure and some identity to now definitely a formidable Grey Cup possibility. And it's because of the leadership of guys like Bakari Grant. He's been a big-time playmaker and a great leader on this team.
Well, there you have it. I mean, that's our first salvo. I've got a few interviews, and you know, I don't mind hearing what coaches and players have to say. So Christopher Jones is here. Say hi, Chris.
Greetings.
Rob J. Emery is here. Say hi, Rob.
What's up? What's up? What's up?
John Granger is here. Say hello, John.
Say hello.
Okay. He took me verbally. All right, so literally.
He said say hello.
He said hello, John.
Okay.
Say hello, John.
So he should have said hello, John. That would have been better. Yeah, okay.
Okay,
so,
sorry.
So, guys, all right, so we start with the Eastern Division Final. I played those two pieces because I would like to start with talking offenses. In my opinion, that might be the key to this game, is the offense and the success the offense has. John, you want to start?
Yes, and I think the key to these games, both these weekend, will be the weather. That's going to be the offense, and that's going to be the defense, all bundled up in one. And it ain't looking too pretty from what I hear come Sunday here in Guelph. They're already getting some snow overnight, I heard, in Kitchener and so forth, which is close to Guelph, anybody doesn't know. So weather, I think, is going to be the key factor here, which is going to then affect the offense, which we're about to talk about. And I don't know. I think the offense is going to be a running game, and I'm switching sort of to Gable being the key factor in this game. You know,
there we go.
I know you're going to like that, Robbie.
I like that.
But I'm only going with what I see and what I feel and what, you know, kind of develops. I'm never trying to favoritize anything except for what perhaps the facts are. And the facts are weather's going to be a factor. So Gable, I think, might have an edge here. And if that's the case, it's going to be a running game, and I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Well, the equipment manager, Chris, has to put Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I don't disagree with you on it's going to be a running game if the weather's a factor like that, but C.J. Gable's a bit of a scat back, and they don't tend to do very well in the weather. They can't do the cutting. They can't do the jiving out there because they're slipping and sliding. You want a power back that goes straight up the middle.
I remember a couple of Grey Cups that back up that principle, outdoor Grey Cups, before the domes were put out there. But then again, what we're talking about, guys, right, it becomes a problem with rain. Just pure cold is not as big a deal as rain. Am I far from the truth there, Chris?
No, cold, rain, ugly, miserable West Coast weather. I've been there, done it, seen it, tried it, got the T-shirt. There's nothing worse than being wet and cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm referring to if it's only cold, then it's not so bad. It's just a question of putting the right shoes on the right surface, right?
Hey, yeah. Minus 20 in the prairies is a cakewalk. You want to be plus 2 in Vancouver with the rain coming down. I think Toronto's probably the same thing with, you know, or Guelph for that matter. When it's humid and cold and not quite freezing, it just gets you right to the bone.
That is horrible.
It's a miserable.
That is horrible.
It's a miserable time.
Rob, you said that
the equipment manager.
Yes, Rob, you said the equipment manager is the key.
Well, yeah, the equipment manager has to say, okay, well, you know what, it's going to be a wet, snowy day or whatever, and he has to screw in the right cleat studs for the cleats, right? Because, you know, like, Gable's got to have good grip onto the turf or whatever, you know. If he has, like, just like a normal little Reebok shoe, he's going to be slipping all over his ass, right? So he's got to have the right cleat studs to grip right into the turf and push side to side.
You're right. But in a way, I think that might have been an issue 10 years ago when they kind of supplied them with maybe one or two pairs. But the boys now with the sponsors, and I understand Reebok is pretty good to them, they're not worried about having to put the cleats on. They already have like two or three pairs like that ready to go. They just got to get them off the shelf. That's the advancement that we've had to see and progress in the sporting world. That you're right, Robbie. To a point, that might have been a factor more 10 years ago about having
years.
To quickly prepare them. Now it's like they can go into the shelf room or whatever and just pull out whatever pairs they need. They got three or four sets of each one, whatever the weather conditions go. But we're gonna go back to the cold. I don't think is the factor. I think it's more or less the precipitation. If it's gonna get wet, it's gonna be a problem, and it's gonna turn into a running game. And I think Gable has even though he's a scatter, I get it. I know he goes from side to side. But I just think if that's the factor, and they got those three other quarterbacks, or I'm going to say three, but the two other backups that they used pretty good against Montreal the last game, you know? So Burris is not going to be running. I know that. I know. I think you guys know that, too. I hope not.
I hope not either.
It's not going to be pretty. But I think Gable's
going
to be a factor.
Apparently it's not as dangerous running during a game. It seems more dangerous running during practice. After today.
Are we talking Cackard now? Are we talking Cackard?
No. I'm just making a point. All that effort to rest guys, and then it comes to a practice, and you get hurt. Yeah, no, you know, and that's what happens in games. Slippery games mean guys can get hurt, groin pulls because of, you know, the weather, cramps. All that wonderful stuff comes into play, doesn't it, guys?
Sure does. I don't know if the rest of the boys know about Kakarot's injury today. Do you guys know?
I just read it on Facebook, and there was a big, huge smile on my face. So
I bet it was. Yeah, in case the listeners who don't, they practiced today at the Rogers Center, and supposedly the turf is not in the best condition to practice on. I hear that even the high school that they practice on a regular basis would have been a better suited place to practice. But anyway, whatever the situation was, Chad Cackard got his ankle twisted up or something or another happened to it, and it doesn't look good, where it's even doubtful that it's not going to heal in time for the 17th. But, you know, we got a little while to go, right? But that's the news out there, and that's the fact, Jack. He's not talking too much, Cackard, about it, for good reason, you know. And I think Norwood might be getting a lot of reps in the next few days, I think. So that's the
news. For sure he will. And you know, they'll have two different. I'm happy with that. But as far as the running backs for the Argos, but back. I want to send out a shout out to David Michael Hugart, and if I'm saying his name right, I hope he's a new listener to the show, and he lives in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Awesome.
Do me a favor. Say hi to David, guys. Hi, David.
Hey, what up,
hello, David?
What up, David?
Thank you, David, for joining us. Yeah, he's a Saskatchewan fan, just for your information. At least
there
if you go.
Go
by.
Okay, I'm taking that back. Not up, Dave. Not up.
I'm on your side, David. I'm on your side.
There you go. All right, guys. So basically. The offense is what did you have this from the interviews? If you heard, I hope you heard the interviews. If you heard the interviews, is there any comment you want to make on the interviews? Troy Smith seems to be very confident. Does he have reason to be?
Yes.
I'll start with you. Okay, go ahead, Chris.
I think he does. I think he's a talented quarterback that's got experience. He's not coming in out of college, like they said. He's not green. He's new to the CFL. He's got a lot to learn in that aspect. He's learning it daily quickly. He looks good out there. Like I said earlier in the different previous show, is that there wasn't a lot of film on him, or not everybody was paying attention to him until he came out and lit the place up. I'm sure Ken Austin has pulled everything that he possibly can out there and now has some answers to some of the problems that's going to be there. So I don't think he's going to come out there and light it up quite the way that he did in the first couple of games. I think Hamilton's defense is going to have a bit better answer for him this time around than they did before, even though they did do a wonderful job last time. The weather,
John,
like
that topic?
Don,
oh, sorry. Go ahead. Keep going. Keep going, Chris. I apologize.
Burris's ball control is the big issue for me. I absolutely don't like the man. And he just cannot protect the football well. So, you know, that's the key thing, is if he can keep his hands on the football and not keep turning it over, I think Hamilton's going to do a better job than Montreal is.
There you go. I like that. I like this guy already.
How about you, John?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't hear the interview.
Basically, summarizing, he feels that he's ready to do the job. You know,
right.
He might not have that much experience, but he has he has a lot of talent. He has the ability, and if you listen to that interview, there was almost, I'm not sure, guys, I heard a little bit of a slight to Calvillo. If you heard, I think it was S.J. Green, he said, we have more options now downfield, which basically means they've got a better arm to work with. I don't know if you guys caught that. I was just checking to see if you guys caught it, but that was one of the comments. So they feel in Montreal that with him, under the center, they've got a more of a deep threat. And I think the key guy there would be Carter, would be the deep threat that they're talking about, one of the deep threats that they're talking about.
I like Carter.
Go ahead, John. I know you do.
Yeah, I really like Carter a lot. I mean, I like his dad a lot. I mean, the guy follows his son around everywhere now that he's up in the CFL, and I know he's a broadcaster down for the NFL, and that's kind of nice to see. And you get a little bit more recognition down in the States when you got your dad coming up and the media follows the story. But Carter is a pleasant surprise for Montreal. I don't mean to go off track here, but there's something I got to bring up. Ticap fans, and
uh-oh,
this is Bruce Inch, very disappointed in you guys. You haven't sold out Guelph yet, and there's so many tickets available in a 13,000-seater stadium that it's pretty freaking embarrassing. And from what I hear, you guys are getting a little bit cocky, not wanting to make the trip because you're just planning on going to the Rogers Center the following week. And if that's the case, shame on you, the diehards, because there's got to be at least 13,000 diehards that can kind of, I mean, I checked on Ticketmaster, there's plenty of tickets in every section, like, what up? Okay, I have to get it off my chest, and if that's the case, you know what, I'm heading down to Guelph this Sunday to watch the game, just to fill the seats. It's disgusting. I'm embarrassed.
Come on, John.
I am. No, my wife and I are going down. I mean, we got to. We got to wave our Argo flags. If you guys are going to leave seats for us, then I'm going to be right that center making sure you know I'm there. So, Jesus Christ, go buy your tickets, Ticap fans. I don't want to have to do that, guys.
John, great rant. I love it.
Thank you. I had to say it. It bothers me.
Rant.
13,000.
Okay, hang on a second.
Well,
hang on a second.
Hey, John,
your name dropped.
Your
name dropped. Hang on a second, Rob. John name dropped. He name dropped Bruce John Inch, and Bruce just sent me a message saying there's 500 tickets left.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Yeah.
Just
I'm
letting him have his say. Bruce, thanks for the message.
Good.
Regardless, it should be sold out. I have to, partly I have to side with John because, quite frankly, we're now into the weekend, right? Being Friday, and the game is on Sunday, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy to hear there's only 500 because I'm happy to hear there's only 500. Yesterday when I checked, it didn't look good. It didn't look good. And I'm just a little – and then there was a couple of Ticap fans that commented that they're skipping Guelph and just going to the game on the 17th, which I thought, really?
Well, it won't
no.
be – hey, listen, if you're the players on the field, and you see partly empty stands on a big game like that, I hope it doesn't get in your head that you've got it won too, and that'll inspire the Montreal fans a little bit. And the and of course the team.
I get it. I feel for Bruce. I feel for it. He's one of those guys who's going to bring all his family and friends, and I know he's not going to skip it. But, you know, he must feel a little bit crappy having to say there's still 500. I mean, this should have been – it's 13,000, okay, capacity. Come on, guys. You haven't been in the playoffs in eons. And I know it's Guelph. It's 25 minutes away. And
I think the last time the Ticats were in the playoffs was
2010, 2010.
1992, no?
Got out, 2010.
2010?
Yeah,
yeah,
they were
I was
in
still trying to grow pubic hair when they last time played.
They were in 2010. They were in 2010.
Okay, well,
anyway,
very fond
okay.
memories.
So,
anyway,
so now,
we've
popped that bird a little bit. Now, if you don't mind, let's listen to Coach Pop. Interim Coach Pop. I don't know if he's going to be coach a sec. No, he'll hire somebody. I hope he's happy with the job he's doing. I know I am, and he's been an outstanding influence on a team. He's really turned the Alouettes. The birds are flying. Instead of flying south, they're flying north. And just what we said right now, it's quite possible, it's very possible, that the Hamilton Tiger Cats might be a little overconfident. Let's listen to what Coach Pop says and see if we agree or disagree or any comments on the side towards that. This following interview.
Most of the game plan will be the exact same plays and things that we've tried to execute all season long, and it's just a matter of continue to execute it. A lot of the plays are the same. Sometimes the formations are changed, and then there's some tweaks to it. You know, obviously on all phases, offense, defense, special teams, and but in the most part, on a short week, there's only so much change you can do.
First time since 2007 that you're playing a playoff game on the road. Does anything change in the preparation?
It's the same thing. I mean, you know, sometimes when you're dealing with crowd noise, that's a little bit of a difference. I mean, you know, you work to have a home game for home field advantage. You know, for our team, majority of the season, we've played fairly well on the road. So I think our guys are comfortable. And again, it is a tougher environment. Because it's not your home setting, especially your locker room and everything, but it's what you're faced with because of how your season went. So you just kind of get it out of your mind, and anybody can win.
What makes you believe that your team will win this game with all the troubles that the team had this season?
We've endured a lot, and our guys have gotten very thick-skinned to all the challenges that we have had, and you know, we beat every team in this league except Calgary. So, we've done as well on the road as we did at home. And I think that the way our players feel, I shouldn't say I think, I know the way our players feel is that we can win any game we go into. We surely have gone into every game with that attitude and felt like we could. And I truly believe the locker room feels that way on all games that we have.
When you compare this year's team going into the playoffs to last year and the year before, as far as health-wise and maybe just momentum-wise, do you actually think maybe this team is a bit more going for it than it did in the last couple of seasons?
Or? Well, you know, look, we've had home playoff games in the last few years, and the last two we haven't won. I mean, so having home field advantage doesn't necessarily – it should be an advantage. It's not necessarily an advantage. It depends how you handle it. There obviously is a lot more pressure when you are at home, and the team that's coming in is not supposed to win. So it just depends how it's handled and how the players that are playing the game handle it. So, again, like I said, crowd noise can be a factor. But outside of that, everybody's got the same elements, and they got to go out there and play the game. And it comes down to that one game. I mean, this is the difference in the playoff system that we have or football has where you get one shot. You know, it's not a best of 3, 5, or 7. It's one shot, and you got to try to play your best football that day. And really, whether you play your best or not, it's about having one more point than the other team.
You become more vocal in the huddle as each week, as each practice and game goes by, and start taking on a leadership role of his own?
Oh, I do think that, especially since he's been starting and now he's in charge of the offense because he's the quarterback, that he has stepped right up to the plate and took that role on, and guys have fallen right in place and listened to him, and he's getting them lined up and what he needs them to do, or if he made a mistake, he'll be the first one to say he did. Or if he needs someone to do something, he's getting them to do it. So He's doing great at that.
Man, that interview had some cliches in it. I kind of like them. You know, I like the discussion about home field and how irrelevant home field is, and he highlighted it by the fact that the Alouettes lost their last two playoff games. So, needless to say, home field advantage, and I guess it would be fair to say as well, considering that there's going to be empty seats in Guelph, both teams will be playing on the road. And it must feel like that for the Ticats and the Ticat fans, and this will be the last time they have to play in Guelph. So, you know, hopefully they'll come up with a game that'll be memorable, not forgettable. And, of course, one of the cliches was, this is, you get your one shot, and you better be playing your best football that day. Yeah, that's pretty much, you know, and like he was saying, it's not, you know, football is like that. One game, you lose it, you're gone. And he's hoping that the bright lights, which will be brighter this week because, it's a bigger game. And he's hoping his guys rise to the occasion. I like what he had to say, and I love the cliches, and I appreciate his his opinion on home field advantage. Chris, you first. What did you pick up out of there?
That's tough to say. I was listening to Pop. I don't like the man as a coach for the Montreal Alouettes. I never have. I was really disappointed when he took over. But he's really done a good job this year, and he's not quite as arrogant and as egotistical as he has been in the past. I think this was a real humbling thing for him, and I'm kind of impressed with him.
Yeah, I mean, I as well, but I'm not surprised, and I wasn't as close to knowledge about this guy. Yeah, John, go ahead,
Frank.
John.
Yeah, he's on a mission. His mission is to prove that it wasn't Tressman that was the key factor in winning at Montreal, and I think that's the biggest reason why he didn't bother trying to get a possible replacement. He's taking over to prove that it's him, and it's the players that he puts together that is the winning formula for Montreal. And I've been reading some Gazette articles regarding his, you know, mannerism regarding that. You know, he wants to more or less show that it wasn't the Chicago Bears NFL primary coach right now that was the key factor in Montreal. And that's what I get sometimes from his interviews, too. He's got to be. He's a double leader. He's the GM, he's the coach, and he's got to protect his players and say all the right things for them. So, and I think that's his mission right now. He's on a mission. Austin?
And he's done,
what's he on a mission
for? And he's done
for?
A good job. Well, hang on. Austin will talk about, I've got him.
Yes,
a couple of things. Before we move to Austin, okay, we'll hear Austin, but let's finish talking about Pop. I got a message on Facebook. Bruce John Inch said he's not going to the game, but he will be watching on TV. And his girlfriend, Phyllis Babin, is wondering, Chris, if you like, Christopher, if you like anyone.
Yes.
Is she?
There's lots of people.
Good.
I like.
Good.
Okay. I just, what a great question.
It stumped you?
It did, yeah. You know what? I'm a huge Ricky Ray fan, and I was thoroughly disappointed when Ricky Ray went to Toronto.
I bet you were.
If Ricky Ray had gone to Hamilton and Henry Burris went to Toronto, that would have just been awesome. Because then Ticats, my number two team, would have my number one quarterback there. That would have just been totally fabulous. But it didn't happen, so I am a fan of Ricky Ray, and for that I cheer for the Argos when he's out there, but more for a Ricky than for the Argos, because I think Toronto sucks. And I don't like Burris, but I am a Ticats fan. So
there you go. So,
oh my God.
So Bruce Inch's girlfriend, Phyllis Babin, can be relieved in the thought that you are a Hamilton fan. Unfortunately, she disagrees with you on the Ricky Ray front. She doesn't like Ricky Ray at all. So, well, she has her dislikes as well, I guess. Yeah, so...
How can you not like the best quarterback we got?
There you go. So Pop is, we all knew before the season started, right, guys, that he was a great general manager. and he put together some really good teams. And, you know, at the beginning of the year, when I even forgot the name of the coach, no, I'm kidding, that he hired, and I know he wishes he could forget the name of the coach he hired, and I'm going to help him out. It seemed as though Pop maybe it wasn't so much Pop as it was Trestman, and then he comes down to the field, and he really does take a team that was totally destroyed and basically bring it back to life in pretty quick order. Wouldn't you agree? Even though you don't like Pop, Chris?
Oh, without question. He did a wonderful job this year. I get full kudos. He's done a wonderful job. Montreal has turned it around. Four weeks ago, I would say Hamilton would destroy Montreal in this playoff game. And now, I'd flip a coin on this one on Sunday.
I'm in total agreement with you on that score. John?
I would have said maybe 3 months ago that Hamilton would have destroyed Montreal. But Montreal's defense was always there, even at the beginning of the season. It's just that they couldn't produce any points, which was their downfall. So now they got a little bit of a trigger in a point producer in the quarterback, which is a double weapon. The guy can run, which is the scary part about him. Besides the zinger that he's got, you know, in his arm, he's actually got some legs, which is it's always scary in the CFL when the quarterback can run. And that's why really in Ricky, there's not a lot of threat there, guys. We were talking about Ricky here just for a second. There's no threat in running, you know. And again, we're talking about the weather. He might be a key factor. Gable for Hamilton, him for Montreal. Yeah, that's how I sit on it.
I'm not arguing.
No, there's no argument here either. Okay, so Rob, you got a comment on the interview that Pop gave, or any opinion on Pop?
I don't like Pop. I've never liked Pop.
Don't you like Ma?
What's that?
Do you like anybody?
I like Ma,
Rob?
But I don't like Pop. John, you jumped on my joke first. My youngest doesn't drink Pop, so she doesn't like Pop either.
Yeah, no, I...
She doesn't.
I don't know.
I believe you.
I just have a thing with Jim Pop that I totally dislike him. I have no idea what it is, but I don't...
Is it because he's American? Don't use that against him. That's not fair, Robbie.
I'm making fun of the Americans.
Robbie, just because you like drinking Pop doesn't mean you have to like Pop. Okay, let's move over. Let's move over to the next guy, Kent Austin. Since we're Kent is a little more. I gotta say this. He seems to do most of the talking for Hamilton. When you go to scour interviews and stuff, it seems 90% of the comments and the time spent for me listening on Hamilton has to do with Kent Austin. His interviews are much longer than everybody else's. He has a lot to say.
When did you know that CJ was going to be as valuable as he became for this team?
Well, you don't ever know for sure, right? He obviously had a great camp. But all of the coaches were a little cautious with a guy that hasn't proven himself in a regular season game, you know, how well he would actually play when the lights are on, when the game really matters. But he is a really great football player. He's not just a really good rookie. I think CJ's one of the best offensive football players in this league, rookie or non-rookie, rookie or veteran. And I think he's one of the best overall pure football players, period, in this league on either side of the ball.
What impresses you more, his running ability, his pass-catching ability, or his pass-blocking?
But see, that's just it, right? He does everything really, really well. He's by far the best blocker in the league. But then you look at his stats, I mean, he's almost 1,400 yards in 15 games in production. He plays on teams. The guy is a complete football player, and like I said, I'm biased because I coached him, but I've coached a lot of good players up here. He is one of the best pure football players in this league, not just offensively.
How important is he then Sunday? I don't want you obviously.
Really important. Yeah, I mean, CJ is a big part of our offense in all three of those areas that you just mentioned. So he's important.
CJ's numbers against Montreal haven't been off the charts. Can he still contribute even if he's not lighting up the stat sheet?
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, we've asked him to protect the quarterback in a couple of the games, which he does better than anybody in the league. And I don't think it's close, honestly. CJ will contribute to the absolute best of his ability regardless of the role that he's given. He's a completely unselfish guy.
Second day of full practice, how is everything coming together? I mean, I know you're someone who just kind of waits and just measures the team as the week goes on, but playoff time, you get a sense that some of the younger players are getting a sense of the importance of the moment Sunday.
I don't think so. I don't think we brought too much focus to it outside of just focusing on getting them prepared and as coaches, and then trying to evaluate how well they're preparing themselves, right? Not just on the field during practice, but in meeting rooms and you know, and off the field. So our guys are taking the same approach that we've taken to every game. I don't know why it would change.
Use the word unselfish to describe a guy like CJ, but I think that probably also applies to my friendship as well.
Mm-hmm.
He enjoys blocking as much as tackling,
mm-hmm.
and blocking for those guys to make the runs back. Tell us how you feel about Mark.
Mark's had a great year, an indication of some of the qualities that you just mentioned is the fact that his teammates voted him as one of our captains. He's had an outstanding year. He's a leader on special teams. He really builds into the younger players to make sure that everybody's assignment's sound. He does all the things that we ask him and does it the right way.
How is Mr. Ellingson coming along?
Greg's doing better. He I got to see how he responds today. He got a lot more running today than he did yesterday. But I would say he's probably closer to probable now.
You wouldn't have any trepidation about putting him in, even though he's missed 6 weeks in that environment, in that situation?
Nope. No. He's produced for a reason. He's played a lot of football this year, and he's proven that he can produce.
How much of an advantage would it be then to have him back in there and just be a guy who's not banged up, considering that most of the players?
No, I mean, he was a guy that was leading the league in receiving before he got hurt. So he'd probably be up for Rookie of the Year too. Depending, we'd have a tough choice if he had stayed healthy. Greg's a good football player. He's smart. He can retain a lot of information. He's a low rep guy, meaning that he doesn't need a lot of reps during practice to understand what we're doing conceptually. He's trustworthy.
There you go. So he has a lot to say, and that was all about C.J. Gable, and I really don't think. All that attention on C.J. Gable is unwarranted. He's going to be an important factor. Do you get the impression that Kent Austin is a real tough taskmaster? I really think that he's a no-nonsense kind of guy. And every time when I met him and interviewed him, I got the impression, and every other ensuing interview has driven that point home, that he's a very serious do it my way or the highway kind of guy. But then if you do it his way, he backs you up 100%.
Yeah. You know what he reminds me of, Frank? I don't know if you guys will agree, and I'm kind of aging myself a little bit. He reminds me of Sparky Anderson, the Detroit Tigers in baseball back in the day. Very intelligent, calm, cool, collective in interviews and the way he describes his players. But on the field, I mean, he's just a firecracker. Austin verbally gets after the refs. He's right on the field. He's chasing them down. Kind of reminds me of Sparky Anderson. I don't know if you guys remember that guy.
Absolutely,
but,
and he gets calls, too. And he gets calls, too.
Yeah. And
I'll date myself even further, John. Sparky Anderson was a manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs in baseball.
Oh, okay. You're going way back.
It's the Toronto Maple Leafs, the ones before the ones that play in the Intercounter League, the one in the minor leagues before the Blue Jays and before they left. Yeah, he was a manager, and you're right. I remember Sparky as a short guy, always had gray hair and a fireball. The guy was just incredible. He was, he'd look up at that umpire and give him, you know what, and he'd look up at the umpire and give him, you know what.
He backed his players up 100%. And I mean, you know, Austin with the press conference just knows how to say the right words and the right demeanor. and kind of diffuses any kind of accusations towards his players and stuff like that. Which, and then again, totally opposite when he's in game time mental frame. You know what I mean? I like his coaching. I really like the way the, you know, Hamilton should be really
Heckle
proud of their coach.
He's more like a heckle and jide.
Yeah, which is the opposite contrast of Scott of the Argos. He's calm off the field, calm on the field. There is no facial expression off that guy. Sometimes I wonder if he's got a pulse. But
I think Milanovic can. Milanovic can really. He can get it. Chris, what do you think of Austin and his definition of C.J. Gable and his idea about how prepared the team is for that game against Montreal on Sunday?
Well, how can you can't argue with him with his analysis of C.J. Gable. I mean, I'm really big on C.J. Just for Bruce's girlfriend there, I like C.J. Gable.
There's one.
I think he's one of the best scat backs in the league right now, if not up there. I'd hold the candle up there with Stefan Logan. I think the two of them are awesome. Ken Austin, it is really hard for the players not to go to war for him.
Yeah.
The players like him. He will do anything for them. He will back them 100%. And when a coach does that for you, the players go to war.
No matter how talentless the team is, boom, boom.
Yes.
So you hit it. Sorry.
Ouch.
Throw that one. Ouch.
I'm not going to disagree with you, but because the Ticats are who they are, they do have talent, and I think that Montreal is going to be out-coached in that game.
Yeah, could be. You know, out-coached or out-GM coached. You know what I mean? Are they? Because Austin is really the GM. They're both really GMs in my eyes. I mean, you know, Austin, I think he's really the GM of the show. Is he not? Is he doing like a dual job there? I don't even know that. It could be.
Yes,
I'm not sure.
Yes, he's the GM as well, but he hasn't built that team.
Okay, you're right.
I mean,
came
in last year. This is Pop's
right.
team. Pop has been there for over a decade.
Good point.
You know,
good point.
You know, 100% those players on the Alouettes right now are Pop's. But, you know, Austin right now is still playing with Burris, who he hates as much as I do. And, you know, he's not thrown – this isn't his team yet. He hasn't got his signature on it. But as a coach and the way that he plays his players – You have to admire him.
Yeah.
He's brilliant. He's like a brilliant football mind.
And he went to a well, you know, the mistake he made with the coach he brought in this year was that he thought he insulated him with a lot of coaches that could help him to ease his way into the CFL. He was clearly wrong. And not only that, you know, Trestman didn't, I was told, you know, people say to me, well, Trestman wasn't a CFL guy and he did really well. So I guess Pop thought he could do it again, but it didn't quite work this time. But what I really admire about the guy is he cut him loose. He knew it wasn't going in the right direction and he didn't wait till the season was lost and he really did turn it around. And that's another admirable thing I have as far as Pop is concerned. Go ahead, John. I know you wanted to add something there.
No, I think you pretty much covered it. I was about to kind of add that by bringing in another American coach with not a lot of CFL experience, was he there again trying to prove that Trestman wasn't a factor? You know, I can bring anybody in. Look, I'll even bring in the farthest possible idea of a coach coaching this team, and it didn't work out. So he thought, I really thought he would get a replacement. And maybe it's too late to get a replacement that far into the season, even though it was pretty early. But to me, when you just
John, it's
that
hard.
Up,
it's hard, John. It's hard to carry two contracts for a coach in the CFL, especially if they're high profile and if you paid good money to. Well, that's why La Police is on TSN.
Or in Ottawa pretty soon.
Okay, listen, I want to welcome another one of the usual suspects. You know who you are.
Mike.
Hey, gentlemen, what's going on, man?
What up? What up?
What up?
Well, we've been playing some interviews and talking about the teams that are playing in the East, and we've talked about the coaches and their interpretations of players and the systems that they might have to put in place. The cliches have been brought up by Pop that home field may not be an advantage after all. Last year and the year before, Montreal lost in the playoffs. He reminded everyone that in football, you got to play well that first game, because if you don't, there is no other game. It's not like any other sport. You have any comments on Pop, Austin as coaches and GMs for that matter? There's another irony. They're both, coaches and GMs. And, C.J. Gable, how important he's going to be in the game. You have any? We can catch up on your opinion, Mike.
Yeah, no. So far, what I heard, I totally agree with you guys. Obviously, we all agree that Pop's the better GM and Austin's by far the better coach. But with Austin, I think he has Eric Tillman as one of his consultants. So I think
yes,
Eric Tillman plays a pretty big hand as far as on the GM side.
And players.
Yeah.
Even though he's the reason why Ray's in Toronto.
Right. Ironically.
Is he?
Huh?
I said, is he really the fault?
No, I wasn't.
Never mind.
Are you saying he is? No. Hey, listen, you're out west. You know better than I, and I'm more than willing to hear your opinion on that.
I
remember now. I think you're one of those people that believe it was a plot to have the Grey Cup come to Toronto, not only to visit, but to stay? Is that where you want to go, Chris?
Bruce McNall paid $25 million to move Gretzky out of Edmonton into Los Angeles. Is that not correct?
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yep. The Montreal receiver purposely set it all up at the end of the year to make sure that he drops the last play of the game in the end zone. Yep.
John, let Christopher have his say.
Well,
everybody has an opinion.
It's just fun speculation. You can do anything that
you want.
Right? The CFL is known for not disclosing monetary transactions. They have to disclose player transactions. There's nothing to say that Stephen Giles, this other loser kicker that went along with Ricky Ray, didn't go with a bucket full of money.
Right.
Now, this from a team that doesn't have a bucket full of money to give or offer.
Who?
Then that's where the whole rumor that Edmonton owed Brayley, and therefore that was sort of their way of canceling their debts, right?
That's Manasseh's Mike Manasseh, whatever, his slant on this, and it may very well be true, but the CFL isn't exactly a league that throws money around. They throw it around more like anvils than change.
I got it from Dave Naylor, so as far as I can tell, he's probably the top CFL insider, I'm guessing,
Well, he has the biggest platform.
Right. But, I mean, if anyone would know on the inside what's going on, he's probably your top bet, right?
Well, that's why he called it a rumor,
listen,
not a fact. That's why he called it a rumor, and to keep interest and to keep his ratings going, he's got to throw out rumors, hypotheticals and stuff. And that's one that fans out west like to bite on and grab onto, and it's something to go against the Argos on. But nothing really factual. I only bring up the last play of the season in Montreal because there were so many other thousand factors that had to come into equation for that to happen that I'm just pointing out the last play, which is the most evident, obvious one. That's all I'm saying. But it is what it is, guys. I heard it back in the Doug Flutie days. We only won the cup because Argos had money and we bought the team. So what? They bought the team. If that's the case, then we bought the team. They got the best players and they got Doug and people didn't like it. We got Ray, and people don't like it. You're going to get the yin and the yang. So it's all good.
Yeah, and Saskatchewan's doing the same thing this year that you could say any team has done to try to win and use money as a factor.
Sure.
And or, so we're going to find out how successful, and I think we can all agree with this, guys. Not every rich team wins the championship. That's just the way it is.
Hello, Leaf. Hello, Leafs.
Well, I mean, that's only now, right? Because the whole salary cap thing. Because if I'm not mistaken, didn't Edmonton win like five straight back in the 70s?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that was when like the league had no salary cap, and you know Edmonton was the richest team back then. So, I mean, if there was no cap right now, the Riders would dominate the CFL. It wouldn't even be close. Toronto and Hamilton would be the two worst teams. Could you imagine? I mean, the salary cap is what kept the Argos relevant, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know. I don't know if you can point to one team and the salary cap being an asset for one team. I think more or less it's more about management and how they handle, less about the team. I mean, you know, you've got a lot of reasons why teams are successful, but it always comes down to, guys, in my opinion, it always comes down to who's in charge. Hamilton didn't do this night and day switcheroo because of it was their turn. They did it because they got a guy that knows what he's doing, and I don't know how much more proof you want. Jim Popp, the other guy on the other side of the ball, Montreal wasn't that effective until Jim Popp came. You know,
right.
And he has been successful. He has been consistently successful because there's nobody on a team that has more impact. You know, you can talk all you want about Ricky Ray coming to Toronto, but, you know, if Jim Barker doesn't come to Toronto, Milanovic doesn't come to Toronto, Jones doesn't come to Toronto, another Christopher Jones, and therefore Ray doesn't come. So, you know, there's a tipping point.
Whoa, John.
And in my opinion,
Frank. You got to hold up there. Let's cut off the Jim Barker thing. Let's just go from Milanovic on. Because if I'm not mistaken, didn't Jim Barker try to make Cleo Lemon his franchise quarterback?
Yeah, but he...
Franchise. I mean, he had to. It wasn't about to go throw the whole boatload of money at his way. They had to put somebody out there. It was a possibility, but nothing was written up for him to become the franchise guy. That's another little rumor. I think Jim did two jobs, which was too taxing for him. You can't do both in that kind of position. He's a great guy as far as scouting goes and putting the people together, and that's pretty evident what he's done. He was the perfect fit for Toronto. I like Jim a lot. I really do. I think what Frank's saying is there's a lot of foundation to what he's saying, is that a lot of pieces had to fall together, and Jim Barker was the foundation of those pieces and what's going on here right now, guys. I'm sorry, but he's right about the fact that Scott wouldn't be here, Jones wouldn't be here. It's a trickle-ripple effect where you get certain people in that bring other people in, and that's the result that we're here right now. So, I'm sorry, Mike, but I like Jim a lot. He's a people's guy. He's a really good fan guy, too.
John, very coachable. John, it isn't that Mike is wrong. I want to make this point very clear, Mike. He brought in Milanovic, and he brought in Jones, and Jones is an assistant GM. Jim Barker recognized his weakness, and he agrees with you. He made some bad decisions, but then he brought people in that he had faith in that could make the right decision. So while he might have made or almost made that Cleo Lemon mistake, he corrected it when he brought in Jones and Milanovic and let them decide who they should bring. And that's what I'm saying about good management. You don't have to be brilliant to be a good manager.
Chad Owens. I mean, you know, another good find. There's a lot of pieces
Chad
that he put together, which are the Cackard. He was the one pushing for Cackard and found, you know, a lot of good pieces. Jim doesn't get talked about a lot because, you know, Scott got the head coach of the year, won the Grey Cup and whatever, but he was in the shadows. But, you know, I remember meeting Jim in the dressing room and stuff and got an invitation to meet those guys. Really nice guy, and I can see why the players wouldn't want to play for him on a team, but he couldn't separate himself sometimes from a GM and too many duties. But we forget about Jim. I like Jim, Mike. Sorry. Maybe you might not, but I really the Cleo thing might be one thing. There's so many good factors about the guy. Everybody's allowed to have one screw-up, aren't they? ask Rob Ford.
Absolutely.
If Jim Barker wasn't a brilliant football mind, he would not be on a David Brayley team.
Wasn't there reports that Brayley really didn't like him, and that's why it took so long to get Barker that extension? Because that was I remember after the Grey Cup or leading up to it, that was all the talk, like, oh, Barker still hasn't got an extension, and then all
negative
started
Bob
coming
Nicholson,
out with
Bob
Braley
Nicholson,
doesn't
the
like
former,
him.
Mike, Bob Nicholson, the former president of the Argos before
Chris Rudge.
before we got the one we got now is he was the one that really liked Jim Barker. Rudge, you know, Rudge got a lot of good input about Jim and stuff, and he had nothing to do with the keep of Jim. Bob Nicholson was the guy who wanted Jim here and gave him that opportunity to be doing both jobs if he wanted them. So, and he was also the guy that kind of basically let Jim do what he wanted by taking one position only. So Bob Nicholson, we forget about that guy, but yeah, he had a little bit to do with Jim staying here.
Okay.
Or at least getting here.
Mm-hmm. So if you guys were to rank the GMs, like, who would be your top five or top four, I guess?
Top five? Well, hey, first, hang on a second. I want to make the point about the opposite proves what we're saying. Look in Edmonton. Who is really the problem in Edmonton? The recently released coach or Hervey? I'm of the opinion the problem is Hervey.
More like Tillman. Hervey, you're talking about Hervey.
Well, okay, hang on. Hang on a second. Hang on a second, Mike, or Manasseh. How further behind it before the season started were Edmonton of Hamilton? Where would you have put those two teams prior to the hiring of the new GM that Hamilton has? Well, what state were both those teams?
Yeah, you're right, about the same. Right, I give them...
Right?
Right.
And in fact, Edmonton made the playoffs where Hamilton did not and played against the Argos last year. You know, so you know, this is the beauty of the CFL. You know right away if a GM's good or not. Look at Wally Buono.
He's got the best GM. Buono. Wally is, I think he's the best GM and the whole entire CFL and has been for over. In Calgary, you know, he dominated. He knows how to pick the players. The players play for him. He's doing the same thing in BC. BC's very fortunate. He's grounded there, by the way. He's there forever. And he's got the job, I believe, Chris, until he wants it, correct? I mean, he's that much. The loyalty there is pretty strong for him. So I like BC's.
Buono number one. Buono number one. John number two?
Number two, got to be Pop. Has to be Pop.
Number three?
And people are going to... number three, I got to say Jim. You know, Jim Barker.
Okay.
And number four,
I
would have
gone with Huff.
Huh?
Yeah.
Hang on, guys. Well, we'll give you all a turn. Well, everybody gets a turn to mention the top five. So the top five, John's up to three. Four, John?
He just got mentioned. Huff would be Huff would be my number four. Number five, I don't know. Who's number five? I like Abimelech a while ago, so he's not around anymore.
No. Presently.
You know, that was my number five. He retired this year, right? So I can't use him. No, Obi's still my number five. I liked Obi as the Argo. I liked Obi on the Argo.
Okay.
So I still like him when he was in the Tigers.
Okay. So, Mike, how about you? Top five. You ask the question, you answer it.
Yeah, no, Jim Pop, number one. Wally Buono, number three. Or number two, I'm sorry. And then Brandon Taman, number three. Because, and again, he doesn't get any attention, but the guy... inherited one of the worst rosters from 2011 with no talent, a bunch of old veteran guys. The very next year turned the team around, and now they're on the cusp of being Grey Cup champions.
Who did he bring in of significance in your mind?
Well, I mean, his first thing was getting Corey Chamberlain, and at the time he was against the whole hire of Greg Marshall, but Ken Miller at the time was still running things, and he overruled him. But once Ken Miller got out of the picture, he was able to have the freedom to do what he did. And, you know, you look at the offensive line, he brought in Brandon Labatt, Xavier Fulton, he drafted Ben Heenan. Obviously, on the, you know, you look at the receiving corps.
All right.
So on and so forth. All right.
So for the people who aren't really giant CFL fans, let's go by the teams. You can mention the GM's name, but let's go by the teams because it's easier for everybody. So you went with Montreal Pop first, right?
Right.
Buono second, Saskatchewan third?
Right.
Right? Okay,
yep.
Now who's fourth?
Yeah, that's Calgary.
All right. And then after Calgary, fifth?
Yeah, Ken Austin and Hamilton.
Okay. And somewhere before last is Jim Barker.
Yeah, Paul Barker would be next, and then you can have after that Winnipeg,
okay.
Edmonton, make it whoever chooses, yeah.
Yeah, and then, okay. All right, so. Chris, your top five.
Wally Pop, Huff, Saskatchewan, Austin.
So
Barker,
pretty much the same as
the last two.
Pretty much the same as Mike.
Herbie.
I think.
No. Well, we got Huff and Saskatchewan flipped around, I think, and he doesn't have.
Yeah, I think you're right.
No, we're not even close, actually.
Okay.
I got Wally up top,
right,
then
so
Pop, Huff, Saskatchewan,
BC,
Boston,
Hamilton,
Barker. No. It goes BC, Montreal, Calgary, Saskatchewan, Hamilton,
Toronto.
The last two don't count. Or Toronto, and then the last two don't count.
And the last two don't count. I'm gonna say
the waste of.
Yeah. Well, I'll start at the bottom. I happen to believe that at this point, right now. Hervey's at the bottom of my list. I think Winnipeg made some decent changes. They have a football guy in charge. He will prove to be a good GM, I believe. But not today, not tomorrow, but maybe next year. I'll also put Ottawa above those two for sure, just for the fact that he hasn't made those kinds of mistakes yet. Just because he hasn't made those kinds of mistakes yet, you know, and then of course I disagree. I'm going to go back to the top again. My top pick is Barker, and the reason my top pick is Barker is because he came in.
Frank, you're definitely not a homer.
Can I tell you my reasoning? Since you're saying such bad things about me?
Because you're from
Toronto. He won a great cup.
Get
you know, we can
play.
Talk about how great people are. We can talk about how great all these guys are. But, you know, it's been a while since Jim Pop won a great cup. You know, it's been a while since Ken Austin won a great cup. So,
great cup
and you know,
East.
Calgary... okay. So anyway, I'm going. The only reason I'm going Barker because he won, but I have to go with Calgary number two, and then I have to go with Bono number three, and then unfortunately that means I go Saskatchewan number four, and that leaves me with Austin there in fifth. And the reason I have Austin in fifth is because you know we really don't know what he's accomplished yet because it's been kind of. You know, it hasn't been the kind of year that you could call, that you could set anything in stone. Like, Austin might look good because Toronto's had an iffy season, as has Montreal, and never mind Winnipeg. So, you know, we keep talking about the toss-up in the CFL East. It still exists. You know, it's a three-way race for the Grey Cup, challenger coming from the East. Not so much in the West.
So,
and that's why
guys,
that's an opinion.
Talked about Kackert. Is he any updates on him? Is he going to be able to good for the East Final?
There's doubt cast on the ability for him to recover in time. The injury is a serious injury, as stated by Scott Milanovic. And if you want, here, let me see. Here we go. Here you go.
Kackert,
a minute and 27 seconds.
What can you say, Scott?
Not sure at this point. He hurt his ankle, and we don't think it was a minor injury. So he's getting checked out as we speak, and should have hopefully some more information this afternoon.
I find it kind of ironic where you have a bye week, and this was planned obviously once you guys wrapped up first place, right? Like you wanted to have a kind of like a practice today, right?
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we'll do basically the same thing tomorrow. I mean, Keck's from what I saw, it was just kind of a freak deal. It looked like he was just kind of slipping through the line of scrimmage, and I don't know that even anybody touched him. So you know, you be as careful as you can, but sometimes you can't avoid things.
What, like, I mean, this obviously is not a good way for you to, for the team to prepare for the East Final, but you guys have always responded through adversity. But
sure.
What do you think the potential loss of Chad means to this team?
Well, I mean, if we were to lose him, I think the guys, and we talked about it after it happened, I called them up and discussed, I mean, the guys understand this is football, and this type of thing happens, and they'll rally around Jarius and Curtis or whoever's in there. And fortunately, all those guys have played and played a meaningful game. So, you know, if Chad's not able to go, then, you know, we'll be sorry for him, but we'll move on and try to win for him.
And there you have it. To answer your question, that is what the coach said, and I know Scott Milanovic is a very honest and forthcoming guy. He wasn't specifically discussing the injury, but he made it very clear. I think he said it very naturally. You know, they've got concerns that he won't be back. It's a serious injury, and that usually means not going to play. So that's what my answer to your question is, Mike.
Can we put Chakrin in the same category as Buck Pierce?
Ooh, I don't know about
that.
This year? This year? Yeah, you can this year. He's had some horrible luck. Let's be clear about something.
He's had some horrible hits on two injuries. You know, one head-to-head shot, which, you know, you're lucky if you walk away and you come back. Another one on a knee on a side shot. It's not as if he was just running up the middle and he's injury-prone where, you know, he gets hurt and then he does something. Like, it sounds like today, a fluke thing with, but it's more like the stupid turf they got at the Rogers Center. Like he said, slipping and sliding, nobody touched them, you know. I can't put him in that category. Not even close. That shot to the knee on the side. Who the hell could withstand that? And then to come back as a running back. Kudos to him to go through rehab as fast as he did. And that headshot, you know, it's a headshot. What are you gonna do? It's not the same thing as Pierce. Pierce, Jesus. I mean, he got hurt in every part of his body: ribs, ankles, hips. Can't say he's the same class. Not yet. Not in that category, guys.
So I think
took some horrendous hits.
He has taken some horrible hits.
To John and Frank, then, how would you guys react if this offseason Barker decided to let him go and get some cap space and go with a cheaper guy like Norwood or Curtis Steele or some other running back?
I'd be disappointed.
I'll talk to you in two weeks.
It won't happen. Okay. It won't happen.
Because at the end of the day, Mike, this guy, first of all, you don't get rid of him, like John said, a concussion, a low bridge hit, which to me was a cheap shot. A headshot's a cheap shot. You know, this injury today is one that he got tripped up by a carpet. You know, that's to me, that's bad luck. The problem with Pierce is he puts himself in harm's way, and you're not surprised he gets creamed. And people keep saying to him, you got to protect yourself. This isn't something that Kacker took a reckless attitude. And I love you, Buck Pierce, but you do have a reckless attitude, and you cannot be surprised that you get hurt so much. There's
you
a difference.
It, Frank. You nailed it.
There's a difference.
I think that sums it up. That sums it up. No, you said it perfectly.
What about the fact that, you know, contract-wise, he's one of the higher-paid running backs, and
Mike. That answer is going to be, you're right. The answer is going to come in 2 weeks. You're asking a question that needs to be asked in 2 weeks or in a week, right? Because
so you don't think Norwood has shown you enough yet?
No.
Well, of course he hasn't. You know, what did Kacker show me? Let's see. Most valuable player in the Grey Cup. You know, when it really mattered. And you know what, Mike? I'll take a guy who plays badly half the season or is hurt half the season, but if he comes up, because he was hurt last year too. I forget why and how, but I think he was hurt last year as well. When it comes to the big game, I want the guys that play the big game, that play big in the big game. You know, and that's
as
where
long as he's
we're
together.
Gonna find out what.
As long as he's together.
I'm sorry. Yeah. No, I hear you, Christopher. Sure, I hear you. You're right, 100%, man. That's what I'm saying.
That's why I'm saying
you can't. Go ahead.
He might not make the big game this year.
No, I get that. But But the question's asked, what do you do with Kackert after this year? Well, the year isn't over yet. You know, if Jarius Norwood or Curtis Steele, you know, win most valuable player in the Grey Cup, are you kidding me? I wouldn't want to be Jim Barker. I wouldn't want to be Scott Milanovic. I wouldn't want to be the fans to think about that. Because, you know, this is going to almost sound racist, but I promise you it isn't racist. The CFL does at times, and I think one of the reasons why Kackert is so popular, they want to have a white guy to show off as well, you know? And that he's a good PR guy for football in Canada. Not because anybody's against black players. And, Mike, you're the one that raised this a while ago, didn't you?
Yeah.
Isn't this your opinion as well? And I'm raising it because I agree with you, right? He's a good promotion for the team. You know, a person that is more relatable. What's wrong with that? As long as he can do the job, right? But that's why I'm saying, if all of a sudden, you know, either of those two running backs lights out in the playoff, and then maybe even if they're lucky and make it past whomever they meet and go to the Grey Cup and become one of the MOPs, most valuable players, MVPs. It's going to be a tough decision. But how tough is it going to be if the Argos lose in the playoff? Really, seriously, Mike, how hard a decision is it going to be?
I just feel like, because you know how Barker is, he gets that cold-hearted, doesn't really care at times. And I just, you know, you look down the road, they got to think about Inman's contract, Childs, you know, on their offensive line. You know, Owens just got paid. So I just feel like when you look at their salary cap, at some point he may have to come to the point where he has to get rid of one of the big contracts, and he's going to look at Kackert as the most expendable because he's not going to get rid of Ray or Owens. So, you know.
Tell you what.
I just see that dilemma coming up.
This will all be put to rest, guys. It's an ankle injury that looks bad initially because they swell up and it looks nasty. You can't walk on it, can't put pressure on it. Once the swelling goes down, give it 3-4 days resting it. I bet you any money he'll be all taped up and ready to go for Sunday. Okay.
But John, I already heard that they're talking operation today. He might have had an operation already.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's not good.
That.
And that's not good. The operation.
That's
as soon as you say operation.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's a torn ligament. I didn't hear anything about torn. I heard it was pretty swollen. I didn't hear anything about an operation, though. I heard it was pretty swollen, can't walk on it, no pressure on it. And for the swelling the way it is, and Danny Webb, great equipment manager for the Argos, over three decades, I believe, since 1986 or something like that, has been with the Argos. I wouldn't jeopardize it. And he, you know, he calls it the way it is. But at the same time, it's hard to call when something swells up like a balloon. But if there's torn ligament, and I don't know. Doesn't sound right if you heard that.
Yeah, no. Well, no, I'm just saying, John. And you know, none of us really knows, and because we're not there, you know, as part of the, you know, the doctors looking into what's wrong with him. But yeah, that's, you know, I don't believe in freaking out because he's injured. You know, Mike, to finish off my commentary, because they do have some players, and I have faith in Jim Barker again. You know. That he has adequate replacements before the replacements are even necessary. He proved that last year, and that's what made Kackert so valuable, is that he sat in the wings, became an MVP, and he took over from a guy that was leading in rushing. So, you know, I don't exactly worry about a player going down because there's so much talent in North America. Let's keep that in mind. There's a lot of talent in North America, and I said the last show, guys, what's the real difference between a first stringer and a second stringer? Contract. That's it.
Right. So
really comes down to.
I don't know if you guys have already talked about it, but obviously, does it matter to you guys as Canadians if John Cornish were to win Most Outstanding Player? Because if I heard, I believe it hasn't happened since Tony Gabriel in the 70s.
Really?
Not me. Not
yeah.
me.
No.
Yeah. No.
So
I love the fact that he's Canadian, but it doesn't really.
So I'm guessing that means you guys are picking Ray for MOP?
No, I think Cornish is going to get it. I just don't care if he's a Canadian or not.
Too.
Okay.
Yeah,
but
we
don't
care if they're Canadian or not, Mike. It's not like that. Not that we're not passionate about our Canadian brand and so forth, but I really, you know, that ratio thing is just to make sure that we have enough representation of our national players, right? It's not one of those sticklers where I'm speaking, and I hear everybody else agreeing more or less that to us that kind of stuff doesn't matter. It's your talent that matters, and just show us, and I'll vote for you if you're good. You know,
so
not because you're American.
You guys like the fact that they actually award the most outstanding Canadian, or is that you guys like?
Yeah,
the
sure. Hey, listen, Mike. Let's put it this way. CFL fans, the majority of them, I believe, in my heart, I believe. The way they look at it is our Americans and the Canadians are going to kick your American and Canadian asses. It's the way it is, man. They're a team. It's not about or, it's about and. All right? There's Canadians and Americans. And there are rules that stipulate how many Canadians need to be on the roster and how many are allowed to be Americans.
Mike, I can clarify a little bit more. The reason why you have to have that Canadian award is because it is the Canadian Football League, right? So
right.
You have to give some sort of outstanding award for the league that it's named after.
Recognition.
You know?
Right.
Recognition.
Right. It could be if it was the
Maybe
NA,
that's why we don't care.
And North,
Maybe that's why we
North
don't
America,
care if Cornish wins or
well,
not.
That, there you go. If it was the, but you know, it does sound separatistic, if you want to call that a word, where you're separating the Americans and the Canadians or whatever. But because it is the Canadian Football League, you have to show something that you know somebody who stands out and he's born
right.
here and it's one of ours, right? So,
right.
but I got no, I don't feel stronger either way about it. It's all good.
So,
Christopher, how about you?
Yeah.
Uh-oh, he's taking
I'm
a deep breath.
I'm happy that there are really good – no, yeah, exactly. I'm really happy that there are very good Canadians in this league, that there are people in this positions that are not historically a Canadian position.
Yep.
Running back is one of them. Usually we do have an American in this position. Andrew Harris has shown very well what he can do in that position. John Cornish has lit it up beyond anybody's expectations. Am I pleased that they're Canadians? Yeah, sure, why not? Hell yeah. But does it matter? Is Andrew Harris my buddy on the BC Lions because he's a Canadian? No. He's my buddy because he's the best that we got.
Yeah.
If we had a better American in there, I'd be just as happy with him.
There
well,
you
don't
go.
You already kind of with Stephon Logan?
Manasseh. You gotta understand something about Canadians, okay? And you really, because this is the problem with Americans. I'm gonna ding you as an American. You
all
guys
right,
are way too preoccupied with yourselves. You're way too worried about how everybody, you know, that you're the best at everything. You know,
mm-hmm.
That's an American problem. That's an American problem. In Canada here, we invite people into our country beyond even our total patience, if you will. I'm going
right.
to be brutally honest. We're here in Canada. We allow people in our country beyond what the majority of Canadians who are here at the time want in their country. That's the truth. That's the worst I can say about Canadians. But once they're in here, yeah, there's stuff going on, but we're very, very politically correct. Canada's very nice and friendly. You guys screw us over. Americans screw us over, and we apologize for you taking the time or needing the time to screw us over. That's being Canadian.
Well, when you say we screw you over, like in what way? Like, what are you actually talking about?
Hey, you really don't open that can of worms, because I got a list of reasons why the Americans screw us over.
Well, no,
we
go
don't
ahead.
Want to go there.
This is the Friday show. This is the open line, right?
Okay.
Go
oh,
ahead.
Okay. Okay.
No,
I'm going to
put go
it
there.
I'm going to – because, Chris, what, you're going to empty your gun too? Have you got
no,
a lot
I mean,
of your
I'm
chamber?
Not, no, I'm asking because I really – like, educate me on this. I really want to know. I never
okay.
know that there was
what's
issues
our national,
for Canadians.
What's our national game? What's our national game?
Hockey.
All right. Do you know
well,
how much,
lacrosse?
Do you know – No, no, it's hockey. It's hockey. It was lacrosse. The MPs changed that a couple of years ago. Relax. Take a chill pill.
Okay.
How much money is generated in Canada for the National Hockey League in hockey? in money.
Oh, that kind of screw overs. Okay, now you're going. I thought we were going to get oil and
right.
Pretty
no,
screw
no,
over.
No, literally. No.
I'm going to keep it in the sports. I'm going to keep it in the sports spectrum, Mike.
Okay.
45 to 50% of the money that's generated by the National Hockey League, all right?
Mm-hmm.
All right? Mm-hmm. That's what we put into the league. The last
wow.
20 years, we haven't won a Stanley Cup. For 45% of the money, we've got zero for 20. Here's the other thing. When Bettman came in, Hamilton had a team, they built an arena because there was a constitution, as every league has to have. That's why there's a thing called antitrust. You understand antitrust rules, right? Okay.
Yep.
And the Constitution said, if you can come up with a state-of-the-art NHL stadium, an owner who has the money and the wherewithal to support a team, and the fans to fill the seat to a certain degree, then you get a team. Bettman turned them down because, and the reason he gave was, we didn't look into it, so we won't give him a team. Hamilton deserved
wow.
a team. Okay, and they did
still
not
do.
Get a team. Exactly. And this, to me, is how the American owners, screwed mm-hmm. us over. Because, again, I repeat, we are the best. We are the center of the world. Everybody else should be grateful that we exist. You want an example? Yes, we did spy on you, but we did it for your own good.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, on that point, though, Frank, you guys know... Let's not kid ourselves. America, military-wise, and just our overall status, we basically are the kings of the world. I mean, let's just call it like it is.
Right.
Oh,
So in other words, you're telling me that I live in a military state because the Americans can do something to us that would be less than nice. So we should be careful of the Americans.
Well,
so we should be fearful.
Every single country in the world is. Yeah, of course. Every country knows that if America wanted to, they could blow
do you
them
not
off
see anything
field.
Wrong with that? Do you not see anything wrong with that? That you feel because you have the power to intimidate,
that you
have the right again. Go
Frank,
ahead, Chris.
No, I mean, look, I don't agree with it personally, but if you look at history and you look at the fact that look at us, like we all live in America and Canada, right? We benefit from a great lifestyle. We have all these resources available to us. Why is that? That's because our countries take advantage of
I don't
others.
Want to talk about that. I'm just talking. Anyway,
you know?
I was just talking about the sports aspect where we didn't get a fair shake. That's all. We don't get a fair shake.
Frank,
Chris, you want me to move on?
Do
you want to move on? Okay.
Well, I need to move on or I'm going to come unglued.
Well,
no, go
really?
Ahead, Chris. You're already getting lathered up. Just go ahead. Jump off the ropes, man.
No. This is what Mike does. This is what Mike does every so often. Christopher.
Come on, Frank.
We've got to give the people what they want. I
guarantee you, everybody listening
okay,
or anyone who's going to download this podcast, they're going to want to hear what Chris had to say.
Can I give you another reason? Can I give you one more reason? I'll give you one more reason. This one connects to Christopher and BC, okay?
Okay.
The NBA awarded two franchises to Canada in
sorry,
1 year.
Going, yeah.
Okay? They awarded two franchises, all right, to
Canada
at the same time.
Yeah.
Never in the history of the NBA has there been a moratorium placed on two teams to not be able to get the top player in the draft.
You're always right about that, Mike.
Was a moratorium.
That was so funny when they did that.
and then they scooped the team
you,
out.
To you, it was funny.
Oh.
To you, it's funny, but how do you think it feels to be a Raptor fan or the former Grizzlies in Vancouver?
Oh,
that's why Vancouver's smart enough to get out.
Hey,
Vancouver, I said, you know what? You guys are obviously not wanting us to win, so what's the point of being here? If we can't win, what's the – because Vancouver puts a premium on winning when anything they do.
Hey, I'm from Minnesota, so I know how that feels. In the NBA is all about big market, big name teams. They don't want small market teams to win. That's been proven.
But I'm just
out.
Saying it's not very sporting. And here's the problem I have is the Canadians are so passive, we're willing to eat shit and spit out roses.
Wow.
That's us.
Okay.
That's
apathetic and polite.
I'm proud to be Canadian. What's that, Christopher? What was that,
Canadians
Christopher?
Canadians are apathetic and we're too polite.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree 100%. That's why when people like John rear their ugly head and I rear my ugly head and Christopher rears his ugly head, all of a sudden people are saying, it's like it's the same thing that goes on when we go to the games to bring it back to the CFL. When we go to the games and we scream and yell and we give the opposition a hard time, people look at us and go, who the hell are you guys? This isn't the way it works in Toronto.
Exactly.
Okay?
Yeah. You know, we even have some people in our media, okay, I'm not going to name names, but he knows who he is. Who would call us aggressive? We're too aggressive as fans. What?
They've never been to Philadelphia, obviously.
Kidding me?
Or
you
Seattle.
Kidding me?
Yeah.
You know, I am like a blur in any NFL stadium. I'm just a drop in the bucket. I don't even exist. But in the stadium that we go and cheer on, and Frank and the rest of the group, we're too aggressive. Get
you guys
the
stand
hell
up
out of
so
here.
It's like amazing when you watch an Argo game, and they sort of like have your like general sections in that direction.
Yeah.
You guys stand out so much, it's ridiculous. It's
like
you're this little pocket of energy in the sea of just molasses. It's just
it's a little sad,
so
yes,
crazy.
It is. But it's, you know what? But it just goes to show that there are passionate fans out there who know how to cheer, who want to be part of a group that knows how to support the team, because we are lacking in that. Hamilton's got it. The rest of the league's got it in their fan support. Toronto,
Calgary,
Saskatchewan, Toronto,
Winnipeg,
again,
every
CFL
team.
The Argos should give you guys free tickets just for what you guys do. Like, seriously.
They already more or less do. They give us a half price on our season tickets in our group where everybody around us, you know, too bad, so sad, right?
They give you 50% off on your season tickets?
More, yeah, it was just about 45 to 50% off.
Wow.
They froze our tickets for this year.
There's another reason for that, and the biggest reason is that a lot of people don't want to sit near us.
Really?
Hey, Frank,
go ahead, Christopher.
I have a story for you guys. It was a lot of years ago, I don't know what year it was,
unglued?
But it was right after
Are you coming unglued?
No, not at all.
Are you coming unglued?
Oh, come on,
oh, okay.
Chris. You gotta give the people
what
they
want. This is a good story, okay?
Yeah, let's hear
it. A long time ago, it was... Winnipeg, BC was playing Winnipeg. This was right after Matt Dunnigan went over to Winnipeg.
Okay.
And I was sitting behind the Winnipeg bench, about the 35-yard line,
mm-hmm.
and right about where the kicker stands. And I went at Troy Westwood, and I went at him, and I went at him the entire game, and I was unbelievable how much I was harassing him. Troy Westwood went 0-for-7 in field goals in that game.
Wow.
He threw his kicking tee at me. He destroyed his net. He threw over the bench. He knocked over the Gatorade can. On one of the last plays of the game, Andre Francis picked off Matt Dunnigan in the end zone. He ran it out to the 35-yard line, walked over to the railing, handed me the football, and he said, "You won this game for us. Thank you very much."
Nice.
Good for you, Chris. We've had a little bit of that satisfying feeling where we've made a contribution. As John will tell you, we've had equipment managers complain about us from Saskatchewan. We've had the yelling and screaming that we do from the small group that we are, and we try to, you know, we've had time delay penalties called. So we take a lot of satisfaction in that. But nothing is close to what you get to brag about, my friend. I honor you and I hail you at this moment.
Yeah, I have that football still.
The job that you do.
Wow.
Good for you, man.
So now, Chris, you got to give us that rant you're about to go off on. Come on.
Oh, Mike, leave him alone. Leave him alone.
Have you checked the time? We're only right now being recorded in replay. The listeners who are listening to us after the show's. Oh, no, wait a minute.
No,
Frank,
John.
I'm so sorry.
That's
correct
right.
me. You started half an hour late. That's right.
Yep. Yeah, I had some problems.
Hey, Chris, you get the rant. Shoot, Mike wants you to rant away.
I'm not.
No. Hey, guys.
Oh, come on.
Guys, okay. Consider what we just went through halftime, okay? We haven't discussed the West yet, and we need to discuss the West.
Yes.
Okay?
Of course.
All right?
Let's talk BC.
We need to discuss the West. Okay. So since you want to talk BC, here's Nick Benavides.
Second practice.
Mike.
It's been really good. I mean, it's been an excellent facility to get work in. And for us, the biggest thing is obviously just to make sure we're kind of inclusive and keeping people out. But the other thing is we could really simulate loud music and noise here, which is a huge factor for our success.
Now, is it loud enough? I mean, obviously, Mosaic is going to be extremely loud.
Well, I mean, it got really loud later on today, and we could obviously pull it up and make it a lot louder, but right now it's extremely stressful. It's something that the guys have to deal with, and really, the guys have done a great job all year with it, so it's not a big deal. The guys are used to it by now, and whatever it is over there in Mosaic will handle it.
Well, there's no real way to simulate a minus 11 temperature here in BC, right?
No, there's no way you do that. Basically, at the end of it, you got to go out there, be mentally tough, focus, and make plays. You know, the weather is the elements. Everybody's going to have to deal with that. A lot of these players and athletes have come from places where they've played in cold games, so that's not relative. What's relative is preparation, being ready to go, and doing your part for 60 minutes.
You are going to chill it down a little bit tomorrow, though?
Yeah, we're going to bring it down a little bit and see if we could get a little cooler in here. But at the end of it, the guys have been doing a good job of focusing in on it. Certainly have discussed it. And whatever, it's not going to be that bad. It's going to be sunny. It'd be great.
Now watching Travis and Pierce, what are your impressions so far the last couple of days?
It's been two good days of preparation. There's still a lot of work yet to be done, but certainly 2 days they've done everything I've asked, and certainly the coaches have done a great job getting them set. They're both preparing to play, and we'll see how they react towards the end of the week and see how I employ them or we employ them. But right now it's been two good days of work, and there's yet 3 days of preparation to come.
Travis has been taking some long throws. How is he feeling? How have you been seeing him?
Yeah, so far so good. I mean, he was able to do some of that in the game, and certainly in practice we're getting more repetitions of that now, and he's getting better every day. But as I said before, we're probably going to need some more time to see exactly where he's at. But so far so good, which is exciting.
Still a Friday decision?
Yeah, it's still going to be a situation where after Friday we get all the information, see how he feels, get all the practice, understand what our game plan is, take a look at it, and then make that decision as we get closer. But if we prepare well, we'll be fine.
The run game obviously is going to be quite important on Sunday. What have you seen? Has Logan brought anything to Andrew's game?
Well, I think the biggest thing is the entire offense is just working their tail off for the last month. They're getting better at it, and certainly Stephon could make some explosive plays. He's a different kind of skill set than what Andrew is, but when you look at the competitive juices, when you look at the energy that Stephon brought along, and you take a look at the offensive line and how hard they're working, really it's truly, truly a group effort. It's not just one piece, but certainly Stephon's done a really nice job at getting acclimated in a short period of time.
Last question. Morale and psychologically, how are the guys doing? How are they feeling going into this weekend?
Well, it's like anything else. They understand the urgency of the game. They understand how important it is. There's some veterans that have been here that certainly could tell some of the younger guys about it. And really, you take a look at it, you know, we've won 2 games in a row. The guys are playing better. We're getting better as a football team. And certainly, whatever happened in the past is done. This is playoffs. So you're all starting in the same situation. We're playing in Saskatchewan, but they have the same record as we do. So morale is what you make it. You understand the opportunity. This is exciting. This is what you want. This is what you work so hard for. And now we just have to go out and do our jobs on game day. And it should be an outstanding game. And it's going to be a huge crowd and a ton of fun. And, you know, it's going to be one of those memorable Sundays.
And I agree with him 100%. It is going to be a memorable Sunday. It is safe to say, gentlemen, that the BC Lions are the underdog for this game.
No arguments.
Okay.
Yeah, John? That's a no-brainer.
All right, so how does the underdog beat, you know, and you notice how that interview started about, you know, how important it is, you know, to get in a stadium and the fans can have an impact on you. I find that kind of, that was just a coincidence, guys. I didn't mean to lead into that, but it worked out pretty good. Benavides is a very smart coach and a very calm guy. Would that be a fair statement, Christopher?
Yes. No, he is a very emotional man. And if you ever watched him as a defensive coordinator, he came unglued as bad as Doug Barry on the sidelines.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
And
I never got that impression from
him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have not seen it as a head coach. But he definitely, as a defensive coordinator, he was volatile. I'm not a fan of Mike Benavides as head coach for the BC Lions. We're going to go back to Bruce's girlfriend here. I don't like him. but that's just me. And Wally Buono's has, if he has a flaw, it is loyalty to his people beyond what's good for the team.
Yeah, there's good and bad in that all the time.
Yes, and that has been his default throughout the years that I've seen him, Wally has. Anyhow, Coach Benny, I would not have made him head coach, but he was a great defensive coordinator, and mind you, so is Rich Stubler. We don't have an OC, so I have a lot of problems with our current coaching situation in BC. That being said, the noise is going to be a factor in Saskatchewan in Regina, unless we can tame the crowd really quickly. If we throw the ball in the end zone in the first few minutes, that'll take the crowd away. If we continue with that, they're going to turn on their own team, and it will work in our favor. So that is huge. That is huge. We've got to score first, and we've got to score often.
I'm very concerned that if you guys score in the first quarter, I think Saskatchewan's going to be the first home of a stadium that the fans leave at the end of the first half.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. Let's take it easy there, fellas. Okay.
Mike,
let's not forget the last time they played, right, what happened? They came out, the Lions scored, they drove down the field, had the first touchdown, the crowd was supposedly going to be taken out of the game, they didn't stop, on defense they brought it, and they went on to generate 8 turnovers, including 2 defensive touchdowns. So it's even if they come out and
so
start well,
it doesn't
at the
matter
end of the
now.
Day, it's too cold, the Lions, they're a warm weather team, they like playing indoors, they're not going to like being out in that freezing weather, that's it. They're gonna fold up like a lawn chair by halftime. It's not even gonna be that tough of a game.
So you don't agree with what Jim Popp said? He said a lot of these players have played in cold climates before, and I beg to say that probably some of these players, have played in even Saskatchewan. So at this time of year, it is a veteran team that BC has, and I don't think that's going to be a factor. I don't think the cold is going to be a factor for them. And I like what Benavides said, you know.
Okay. Frank.
Go ahead.
His name is Mike. His name is Mike Benavides, not Nick. And it's Mike Benavides,
sorry.
Not Jim Popp. Because you just call him Jim Popp, too.
Oh, okay. No, I was referring to what Jim Popp said earlier. I admit to the first mistake, but not
okay,
the second. Yeah, well, Jim Popp is the one that said that all these players come from cold, a lot of these players come from cold climates, so it's nothing unusual for them.
I only got one thing against Mike. I can't, and I'm no fashion guru when it comes to what coaches wear, but the guy can never find a sweatshirt that fits him. I mean, it's either four sizes oversized, he stretches out it cuts out the arms or something. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm sorry.
There's only one guy worse than that. That was Jim Barker when he used to be coaching.
Yes!
My goodness.
Yes. Oh, man boobs.
Wow, that was hilarious.
Oh, the man boobs. Yeah,
I got some pictures from practice so I can refresh your memory.
Let's not go there. I didn't want to lead into that ugly picture scenario here, but I just had to. Does anybody agree with that? I mean, come on, the guy's got to get a better sweatshirt. You got it. There's got to be better in that.
Benny's put on a lot of weight in the last 2 or 3 years. He did not used to be as large as he is now.
Yeah.
Which, if you notice, it happens to most coaches, though. I think it's because you're always sitting in your office watching film, eating junk food. It's like every coach I've ever seen that's been in it for a while, they always put on a ton of weight.
True enough. Except for Huff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Huff, is the one exception.
I mean, he looks like he needs some meat or steak or something sometimes. I worry about that guy in Calgary. When I see him in November, I mean, his cheeks go friggin' red. It looks like he's going through some sort of a stroke or something with the color he changes. I kid you not, man. I feel sorry for that guy. But it is for some people. I mean, he's a hardcore guy. No toque or no hat, nothing. He's all red-eared, red nose, red cheek. He's all out there. So, but yeah, he doesn't gain too much weight, Huff. I don't know how we. Okay, anyway. Let's
speaking
get off
of that,
that.
Though, do you guys remember Tom Coughlin at that the game at Green Bay when it was like 20 below? His face.
Oh.
You got to go online and take a look at the pictures. It's unbelievable.
The Giants coach, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
the
dude.
Funniest
that,
thing.
That was,
just to continue on the Lions just for a second before we get too carried away on back on the NFL. BC was flailing throughout the year.
He
brought in a key player, Stephen Logan, and it's changed the year around. It's very similar to when they were flailing around 2 years ago and they brought in Arlan Bruce.
I don't think it's that big.
Yeah, I think it's Stephen Logan is as big, if not bigger, than Bruce coming on board.
Wow.
We did not have a running game. We now do. Stephen Logan is going to make a difference. I think the two key players in this game coming up this Sunday is Stephen Logan and Emmanuel Manny.
Arsenault.
And it's those two guys are going to either tear this up or they're going to go to sleep. And if they tear it up, Saskatchewan's in trouble.
I think they're bringing their pillows to Saskatchewan. Go ahead. Yep.
Let's give BC a little more love, and then we'll move on to Coach Chamblin on Chris Getzlaff. And I don't know if you guys saw, and you got to go to CFL.ca. You got to go to. There's an interview with Caron Williams on Darian Durant, and then Smith reaches over Kareem. Smith reaches over and gives Caron Williams a big old kiss. If you listen very carefully, you'll hear it. You'll see that hesitation by Caron Williams.
When the weather weighs in and you're playing inclement weather, you need to stop and run. So, our focus hasn't been really to overly pursue Darian because he can shoot up the middle, but more so to stop Corey Sheets, and then everything will feed off that.
How do you deal with Darian specifically, assuming you get the running game contained?
You just have to corral him in the pocket. You know, he's a short quarterback. You know, if you can't see his target, he's more than likely not going to throw there. He's not a spot thrower like Ricky Ray or one of those quarterbacks. So he wants to see his target, and he can deliver the ball accurately. So if we can just corral the pocket, Kareem, E.T., myself, and C-Dub, we can just close that pocket in on him. It's not going to be one of those games where I'm just going to speed rush off the edge, but more so just, collectively compress that pocket and make it hard for him, throw out of a well, get our hands up, we should have a chance.
You said before it's important to tackle him low because he's thick enough to shed high tackles.
Absolutely. The last time we played, we missed a bunch of sacks just because he's able to get low and, use his legs to really, throw us over to the next side. So, we just have to come to balance. We have to slow our feet down when we get close to him and, not try to kill him, but just try to wrap him up and bring him down. It's still good as a sack not to kill him, just to bring him down.
And I want to thank CFL.ca for providing all these interviews, and I find them always interesting every week. It's getting, because of all the guys, because of you guys, it's getting harder and harder to play some of this stuff because it's almost as much fun listening to you guys as it is listening to these things. But anyway, BC Kareem the Kiss Smith, that's what I'm dubbing him now. He discussed a 1 minute, guys, on Darian Durant. And the reason I wanted to play this, again, listen very carefully, the distractions. This team, BC, is very, very loose. They're going to this game, and they know they have nothing to lose. So all they got to do is play the game. I think all the pressure is on Saskatchewan. And if you listen to this interview, you'll get the impression. If you see it on video, you'll know they're loose. If you hear this, you might have to listen a little closely, but here it is for a minute.
I said he's a great quarterback, so our back end has to, maybe lock down our receivers maybe a little longer so we can get there.
How about the cold weather? How do you deal with that?
I try not to worry about the cold weather. It's a mental thing. So, come on, man. It's a mental thing. So I have to, just take your mind off of it. That's all I really can do.
Did you guys draw confidence from the fact that you had success in Saskatchewan before this year?
We try not to think about that. We just need confidence in each other. Everybody here needs to buy in to play calling and just believe that next man to you going to play for you, so that's all we can think about.
How's the week of preparation gone for the defense?
Oh, great, actually, great. A lot of guys lost a lot of weight because it's up. Ah, you boo, did you? Hey, no, just play. Just having fun out there and just being loose and just watching extra films and, you know, doing stuff like that. Come on, guys.
Come on, guys. I'm trying to be serious here. I'm trying to think. Give me a break, man. I love how loose the BC Lions are. And I got to tell you, Mike, that's your biggest concern. As a Saskatchewan fan, your biggest concern has to be how seriously Saskatchewan's going to play and how loosely the BC Lions are going to play. You got any comment on that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. To be honest, guys, I really am kind of worried about this game just because, like you said, the pressure from the fans, the expectations on this team is just, it's immense, you know.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
That was just John talking, Mike.
Yeah, no, I mean, Mike? For me personally, I'm looking forward to them getting through this game and just getting to Calgary where the tables are turning, all the pressure will be on Calgary instead. But if they can just, you know, get through this thing, even if it's just by the skin, you know, just by a point or two, all that matters is get through, get to Calgary, and it's on. That's it. That's all I'm waiting for is the West Final.
You're worried, huh?
What do you think, Chris?
All the pressure's on Saskatchewan, without question. I think they're a little bit too cocky. I heard Darian say something today that our focus is on Calgary, Vancouver. It's not BC's not even an issue. And you go into that game with my defense, and that's going to be an issue. That's going to be a problem for you, Darian.
They're not that good, though. I mean, they were good.
Yeah.
They're okay. So, I mean, let's be honest. I'm more worried about Calgary's defense than BC's.
Oh! Well, we'll find out Monday morning whose defense you're worried about. You might be golfing.
Oh!
We'll see. I mean, hey.
You sound like the TICAP fans who aren't going to Guelph because they're already planning to go to the Rogers Centre, not mentioning names, Brucich. Not good there, dude. That's like almost pre-jinxing yourself to think of
right.
The team. Dude, don't do that. Mike, don't. You're going to regret doing that.
You guys already know I've ate more than my share of crow pretty much all season. So another serving of it, but I don't think it'd be that bad.
Well, here, hey. Let me put some more. Give me another minute here. Let me play this. This is another interview that I think is important. This is from the Riders' perspective, and they have plans for BC's receiver, Nick Moore, who has been a key cog in their offense.
Nick Moore had a lot of success against you guys, specifically. Now, is there anything about him that you think is special, why he's had so much success against you guys?
He's a good player. He had a good season. I got a lot of respect for him as a receiver. He gets his opportunities. He runs good routes, and he goes up and gets the ball. We gotta hang in there and fight and grind with them.
We're gonna go out and execute our game plan. It's not about one player on that team. It's about what we do on this side of the ball, and we just gotta execute. He's a good ball player. They got some great weapons on that side of the ball, and it's our job to execute our game plan to stop them.
They're big play guys. I mean, they've shown potential all year to make the big plays. So, you know, this league, when especially come playoff time, you know, some big plays can make or break the game. So. Realistically, though, like I said, we have to, you know, execute our defense before we start worrying about what they're going to, you know, how we can get beat. So, really, it's about what we do.
They're a good team, so we're just really focusing on us. We got to make sure we do our things right. And if I think we handle our assignments and do everything that we're supposed to do, we should be all right.
We're just working on our game plan. I mean, we played these guys pretty recently in the last, you know, month or so. So, we kind of know what we're going to get. So we're just trying to, you know, polish up what we're going to do and, you know, worry about ourselves.
We've played them a few times this year. So we on both sides of the ball, we have some familiarity. But we know each other very well, and it's going to be a great game. We just got to continue to come on and do what we do. They have a great group. We got a good group, and it's going to be a good ball game.
Well, there you go. So that is the defensive backfield talking in regards to BC, and they're a little more respectful than Darian Durant has been discussed here today by Christopher in particular. Christopher, do you think these guys are taking your team a little more seriously?
Well, they sound like they are. They should.
Yeah, a little different. And they are. Mike, I guess isn't that the key, that they're going to have to shut down more and the like? You know, they've got to stop the pass. And depending who's quarterback, the level of difficulty will be, you know, relative to the health and the ability of the quarterback that's in the pocket.
Yeah, I'm just hoping Buck Pierce is starting, really, to be honest with you. I know Lule, he can come through. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Lule. I think he is a great quarterback, and he's got that, you know, the ice water in his veins, man, and the key situations and the clutch, he can come through. So if he's even close to 100%, I don't know, man. BC might pull this thing out, but if it's on Buck or DeMarco, forget about it. It'll be over by the third quarter.
It'll be over by the first quarter if DeMarco's in there.
Okay. And I think you mean in BC's disfavor.
Of course.
Yeah.
Okay, just want to make sure. I just want to make sure because it would be really funny if DeMarco went in and he win.
And lit it up, I would be amazed, man. I'd be eating crow too, Mike.
The only problem I
will never call in the show again. I'd just be like, I'd retire from there. That'd be it. Got to hang it up. It'd be a wrap.
I think you're badly underestimating the abilities of Buck Pierce.
Me too. I agree with you 100%. That guy might have a game left in him, and he's had a lot of rest since he left, Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
He's been basically practicing and healing, and the thing about Buck Pierce is that, be honest, this guy takes a lot of abuse. As much as we make fun, and I'm going to blame myself for this too, as much as we make fun of him being like pottery, right, it takes a lot to put him down. I've seen him take humongous hit after humongous hit, and still be standing. The whole thing about that guy is his problem is cumulative damage. And right now, his body's had a bit of a rest, in my opinion. I got to admit, I'm pulling, in that regard, I'm pulling more for Buck Pierce than I am for BC. Just so you, I'm a big fan of Riley as well, and I think Riley's just, you know, in 2-3 years, we'll be talking about Riley the way we're talking about Buck Pierce today. And I love those guys. They have all heart and, you know, sometimes not so much intelligence, just a little too much heart, blinding their intelligence a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Show me the difference between Lule, Riley, Dunnigan, Pierce. They're all the same. They put it out on the field.
They do.
You know,
but you have to admit though, there's a relative, you know, while it may be relative, there also is a difference in knowing when you can take a chance and when you shouldn't. When you should hook slide and when you shouldn't. You know what I mean? That's all I'm saying. Nothing more than that, my man. Nothing more than that.
Hey, we got to add a little caveat, too. I mean, let's remember, Buck Pierce, he is a warrior. The guy is tough as nails. I mean, he can fight through all kind of adversity.
But he's only human.
He's never been an elite quarterback. I don't know why people keep saying that. Like, he's a great quarterback.
Wow.
Even when he does play,
Whoa.
He's so-so. He's like, to me,
yeah.
I mean, really, guys. When has he ever had a great game?
Hang on, Mike. Be fair.
Really?
If Riley plays for an Edmonton team that sucks for the next 3 or 4 years,
mm-hmm.
shame on Edmonton. Because they're going to be wasting a talent. And that's what happened to Buck Pierce. He was a wasted talent in Winnipeg.
Okay, even
when
he was there, he never really, even when they went to the Grey Cup that year, he never put up great numbers. He wasn't the reason they won. They won on their defense. I mean, the guy, he's a tough guy. He plays hard. He moves around, makes plays happen. That's all great, but he doesn't have that great of an arm, guys. Just call it like it is. He's never been a great quarterback. He's just been a good guy who plays hard, who fights through a lot of stuff, and people respect
less
him, and that's why he keeps getting opportunities. So,
let's take a step back from Pierce, because when Pierce went to Winnipeg, it was game over for him. He went into it. He didn't have a team to play with. Pierce was a great quarterback when he was playing for BC. Okay, he left BC not because his talent went away or he was not as good as whoever replaced him. He went away because Buono did not trust his ability to stay healthy.
Wow.
Okay, so you know he was doing it for the BC Lions,
and they had Lule. Lule stole his starting job.
Yeah,
didn't he? Didn't Lule steal the starting job?
No, no, Casey Printers took it from Buck, and then Lule took it from Printers.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Yeah. Sorry. Okay, well, listen, guys, it's all over. 2 hours. It just went by so quickly. Mike Manasseh, for those of you that check my word board, and you'll see how to connect with Mike. We don't have enough time there. Well, real quick, Mike, we're down to seconds, buddy.
Yeah, truecflfan.blogspot.com. Thanks, Frank. And, guys, here we go. It's the playoffs, baby. Let's get it going.
Yep. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll see you again next week. John Granger and Christopher Jones. Thanks for tuning in.
Cheers, guys.